the fact that there are so many men in it tells me that the Holy Spirit is moving in the Diocese of Orlando, and you can see that.
Welcome back to the Deacon's Den, where, yes, it's been a minute. However, we have very exciting news to share. In this longer than expected hiatus, the Deacon's Den has moved to a brand new recording facility. It's high tech, it's in a secret location, and it has a much better setup to host our podcasts. But alas, and I'm very upset about this one, there's still no robot bartenders to serve the drinks. Still, we have all we need right now to host discussions that are decidedly diaconate and Catholic conversations. So let me start, Deacon Joe. What do you think of these new digs?
I love it. And we have the same barmaid.
We have the same barmaid.
I don't want a robot. I want to keep the same
barmaid. You want our great producer, Catherine.
Yes.
Yeah. I see she has an assistant bartender here now, too. So maybe the drinks will come twice as fast. But for those who have forgotten us, this is Deacon Joe Gassman, and I'm Deacon Dave Camus. We are your proprietors and hosts. There's one thing I do miss, Joe, and actually I have to laugh because this was underscored when we came into the building this morning. So I had thought about the fact that I wish they had trusted us with the keys to these new digs a little bit sooner, and then surely you told me that your key to this building didn't even work. So I think that was predictive. But, you know, I guess the reason they did that is they didn't want us to spill anything on the floor or perhaps carve our names into the corner booth already.
I thought they were going to bring the benches that we carved our names in already.
Oh, that would have been a much better one. I like that. Well, you know, we're here now. We're going to make it our own, and we're excited to be welcoming guests back to the Deacon's Den this morning. So this morning, we want to just assure all of those of you who have been faithful to listening to the Deacon's Den over the past couple years that it is absolutely our plan to invite all of you back into the Den on a much more regular basis so that we can have these conversations that have been so important to us and hopefully so important to you as well, too. Now, the last time we gathered, and I'm not going to say how long ago that was because it was longer than we all care to admit, we gathered to discuss how it takes a village to ordain a deacon, especially when inconvenient cases of COVID should knock Deacon Joe and I out of the starting lineup on ordination day. No comments, Joe, as to who the cause of that was. You're not going to say it. You're too polite. But in that podcast, to move past it, we invited all of the key players of that day who were called to step up, to show how this team works so well together, to pull all the important parts of this beautiful liturgy together without missing a beat. But while ordination is the pinnacle and the most visible part to the people of God, the faithful of our deacon formation, the reality is that the process of forming deacons is a much longer and far less visible process, beginning with discernment nights and applications, through 6 years of continued discernment and highly structured formation. And what that team accomplishes is even more remarkable than what took place on that memorable ordination day. So today, we've decided to invite two members of our formation team for a chat to discuss insights into the formation process from a rather unique perspective. For it was only on October 2020, not very 2000. Good. I corrected my notes this morning, Joe. This deacon who was with us had just completed his own 6 years of formation, and he and his lovely wife. It's required to always say lovely wife. It's, you know, so his.
Whether
it's in the script.
True or not.
Yeah. Well, we think you're pretty lovely. You had just, you know, finished going through that 6 year formation period, and yet less than a year later, Deacon Joe and I invited you to join the formation team as a deacon facilitator couple, one who would accompany a new cohort of deacons, deacon wannabes really, through the almost 7-year-long process when you think about discernment night all the way to ordination. And so for reasons that go far beyond human understanding, because I still can't fathom it, y'all said yes. So we're excited to welcome back to the Deacon's Den Deacon Dominic, and a first-time visitor to the Den, his wife, Audrey Delio. So welcome, guys. So good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
You know, now, Deacon Dom, this is your third time in the Den, right?
Correct.
We were talking earlier. We got that right. So I actually think you now get the award as the most frequent visitor to the Deacon's Den. We'll have to put you up on a plaque on the wall or something.
I'll look for it.
Can we,
on my next
Catherine,
visit.
Can we put plaques up on the wall? She's like trying to ignore me as she normally does. So that's good.
I'm on these little cardboard things.
Yeah, I'd like it. Yeah, all the sound baffles. Let's do that. Yeah. Okay, we'll carve into that. This is why they didn't give us the keys earlier. So you are the most frequent visitor, but Audrey, you're here for the first time. So why don't you take just a minute, guys, if you could, and just remind our guests to the Den who you are, where you're from, and Audrey, you get to talk more than Dom because you haven't been here before. But Dominic, why don't you start us off?
Sure. So I was ordained, as you said, in October of 2020, and I'm at Our Lady of the Lakes Catholic Church in Deltona, and I'm loving my vocation.
Are you paid to say that? You're loving your vocation?
No, hardly.
Okay. You are loving your vocation. Oh, great. So, Audrey, tell us more about yourself, not just, you know, you tell us anything exciting.
Sure. I work for the Volusia County School District. I've been there for going on 18 years now, and I work in the IT department. Shh, don't tell anybody.
Okay. So if there are any problems with IT today in the Den, you can fix them. Perfect. Okay.
We've been at Our Lady of the Lakes, gosh, longer than I can remember now. 31 years. We just celebrated our 31st wedding anniversary in July.
Congratulations.
Yeah. We met on a blind date.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yep.
Before the internet.
A blind date.
Before the internet.
How much more can you tell us about this blind
date? You have to be blind if you're going to go out with me.
Good now.
Well, we won't make you go too much further into that. I know we had Bishop Noonan in. I said, tell us something that people don't know about you. And he was very cautious about that, how things might be used against you in a court of law later. So, again, welcome. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun in this conversation today. But so let me just start our conversation with that mind-boggling answer that you gave us 2 years ago, back in 2021. What prompted you to say yes to this invitation to become a facilitator couple? We know it's not the pay, and you have had only recently ended having to give up one weekend a month for 6 years while you're in formation. So you had that time back. So you had more time. You had the same amount of money that you're going to get by this volunteer assignment. That was a good life. What prompted you to agree to make this huge volunteer commitment?
I'll go first. For me, it was love. The love of the vocation, the love of the diaconate itself, the program, the possibilities, and then the men that are in formation, just walking with classes above me and behind me while I was in formation and being exposed to all those different aspects of it. I just fell in love with it. It was kind of an easy decision in that regard.
I would say that the thing that struck me the most was when we met with the formation team for you guys to, you know, propose this to us. I remember you saying that each of you prayerfully considered who might be a good candidate couple for this, and just feeling like you guys were being led by the Holy Spirit to ask us, that the Holy Spirit was guiding you guys to consider us, was a big factor for it, because I desire to do God's will. And if the Holy Spirit was putting it on your hearts, then I didn't want to ignore that. And that was a really big factor for me. And then the other part of it is that going to the formation one weekend every month was not a sacrifice for us. We enjoyed going each month. So it wasn't a time, you know, it wasn't a sacrifice to go back to doing
she
that.
Didn't
I
have
did
to write
recognize,
the papers.
Yeah. I didn't have to write papers.
You didn't have to do the work, Audrey. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But it was definitely an enjoyable. The formation years were enjoyable times for me. But I did recognize that it was an obligation of time that we did seriously consider that we would be obligating ourselves once again to 6 more years, 7 if you include the discernment information
and the
nights and everything
here.
Like
yeah.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
go ahead, Charles.
Did you have to work for through any reservations besides the time commitment?
Well, for me, initially, I felt like I thought we were supposed to be left alone for a few years. So I was kind of surprised. Like, well, I don't know that I'm ready from a vocational perspective. I didn't know that I would be ready to handle that responsibility on top of still becoming familiar with my preaching schedule, the other requirements, and, you know, all my other ministry. So The balance perspective was a big concern for me. And then, and we talked about it, and I think it was just prioritizing what I could say yes to and what I could say no to, what we could say yes and no to. But to say yes to that wasn't hard. What was hard was figuring out if it was feasible and if it was for the best of everyone involved. Was it best for the church? Was it best for my parish? Was it best for the men in formation? And I think we agreed, like Audrey said, that the Holy Spirit had something to say about it. And because of that, it was an easy decision.
So there's a couple of follow-ups I want to add to that. The first, I'm going to tell this story for the first time, and I don't think I've even mentioned it to you, Joe, was that you actually came to me on one of the final weekends of formation. You were walking either out of a conference room or out of checking out of your room. I was in the parking lot, and you said to me, "You know, Deacon Dave, if you ever want help with this program, I am so willing to do so." And my first reaction, though, was not positive. And it's not because of you, but when someone gets that eager and I don't think they know what they are getting into, I'm like, yeah, sure, fine, kid.
Bless your heart.
Yeah, bless, right, bless right, your right. heart. Exactly. But I remember that distinctly. So several months later, probably only 6 months later, because you were the late ordination class, and Deacon Joe brought up this question of who should we get? You came to mind immediately, but my reaction was exactly what your reaction was. I thought you were supposed to leave me alone for right. a couple of years so we could get our feet under us.
That's why I asked. That's probably why I said that. I thought I was safe for a couple of years right. and saying it.
Yeah, yeah. So
like in 5 years yeah. or 10 yeah. years.
But then, Deacon Joe, if I remember right, you, I think, approached me after Chrism Mass. It was one of the big liturgical celebrations. And you said, "I really think we should ask Deacon Dom." There he is right there. What put this on your mind that you thought, hey, let's not wait. Let's pull these guys in sooner as opposed to later.
I think the beauty of having that much time with the men and their wives through formation, you learn who can approach. Their behaviors really are the ones that really caught my attention. I mean, both of you were fully engaged with formation. You asked questions. You gave feedback in such a way that your brothers and sisters in formation could receive it. And plus, you were the ones, like you said, you were engaging the upperclassmen and the newly coming in. So, I mean, there was just a lot of behaviors. And again, my heart was at peace. And I knew you could handle all the reading that was going to be asked of you.
So that's a great segue. So we are glad you said yes. We're not having buyer's remorse on this decision. But for our guest edification who are listening to our podcast, would you briefly describe what a cohort facilitator couple does? Without going into too much detail, because we have to keep trade secrets in place, right? But what do you see as your main objectives as a facilitator couple? So what are the objectives you're trying to accomplish? And what are the key functions you perform in order to accomplish those objectives?
Well, I think that as the facilitator couple, we will be walking with the class through the entire process. We start with the application process, the interviews. We even go before the application process. We were there for each of the information nights in each of the deaneries, and then the application process, then the discernment year, and we will continue through the formation, being there whenever the couples are there. And so generally speaking, the facilitator couples will walk with these men and their wives through the whole process.
So the first thing I'm hearing you say, it's really just a ministry of presence to be with them and to walk with them on the journey. In what other activities or functions, Dom, do you? So our listeners get an idea of what you're actually doing and not just hanging out with a bunch of nice people. No. Yeah. Which is the most important part, by the way. I think Audrey hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah,
objective behind doing all of these things is to help the men and their wives continue to discern always.
Yeah.
That's the objective.
And to become more genuine in their expressions over the time, because I think a lot of the behaviors are shielded in formation in a weekend, but the beauty is, I think, with another couple there, seeing the activity report, seeing the things that are going on in their lives between those months helps kind of helps us recognize what else needs to be addressed or might need to be addressed. I discovered something worse than submitting an activity report once a month, and that's reading 15 of them.
So that is a task that you guys have, right?
That's one of the tasks.
Is reading their activity reports.
Yes.
I want to hone in on something, though, a phrase you just used. And you talked about seeing beyond the behaviors they're shielding or the shield that they put up, the false personas, which is something right. Deacon Joe always likes to talk about. We know why they do that. Why do they do that? Why do share that with the other people in the den?
I think part of it is fear. So they want to, they don't want to be discerned out because of any deficiency in their formation process or in their life. So trying to put their best face forward, which isn't always a bad thing, but I think we don't benefit unless we see the genuine person in a situation where as a deacon in a parish, somebody's going to come to you with something that can be very damaging or hurtful, or they might need something that you can or can't offer. So I think in those circumstances, when you're given the opportunity to be genuine, that's where it's going to come out. And you say this all the time, and I love that line. You know, I love the people of the church too much to let you loose on them. And we want to know that they're okay in dealing with any difficult situations, in crisis, or anything that happens in life as not only a deacon, but as a husband, a father, you know, a man of the faith. So.
Yeah, I've had a deacon once tell me you can probably fake your way all the way through a formation. First of all, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I don't either.
And I think not our formation. And especially with the facilitator couple who is observing every nuance. But you can't fake your way through being a deacon. So even if you could, that's catastrophic, right? That's just, it makes no sense to me. And I just wish all of our men in formation, hopefully they're listening to this podcast, would understand this, that because you're human and you have flaws and you make mistakes does not mean we're kicking you out of formation. It's the guy who tries to hide all of those that is the candidate to be asked to step aside. It's so important, and I'm really glad you honed in on that point. If I remember correctly, and Deacon Joe can and will correct me if I'm wrong, you were the first cohort to have a facilitator couple based on the model we're using today. Is that correct? Okay.
That is correct.
All right.
We've got a number of things that really, the team was too small. So when your team is too small, you don't have the new perspectives. That's the beauty of inviting the new person in, that typically you would have at least had a year before you came back. But because of COVID, you were late bloomers, so it came on quicker. But the reality is, the new facilitator couple, like for 2028, has had at least a full year to be able to embrace their vocation and all the dynamics that come along with it. But still, it was your authenticity between the two of you that invited you in. So now we can have you walk through and be with the men that feel they have a call through the discernment nights, through the interviews, so that you get a look at how they're going to present themselves, and that may not be their authentic self. Mm-hmm. And then every step of the way to be there and say, well, you said this, but this is what I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that you walked with the first facilitator couple, obviously there was a lot of experimentation going on that first time. Your reaction was, oh, yeah.
Just the one.
No, they just had the one. It was the one after them that had multiple. But again, that first facilitator couple, they were just trying to do what they could, you know, try to figure it out, trying different approaches. What are the things that you remember about the interaction with your facilitator couple that you either thought were really beneficial, that you said, ooh, let's do that too, or maybe even things that you thought maybe the formation team should do differently, and so you wanted to try something different from what you experienced. So talk about that a little bit.
That I longed for during the whole formation process was feedback, because feedback was critical to know, am I on the right path? Am I doing something? Am I missing something? And there were, you know, it wasn't as consistent because it was a new model and it was in progress. But any time that I had the feedback, I felt very encouraged that even if it was negative feedback, it was good because I could do something with it. But when I had no feedback and I did an activity report and I didn't get any response, I felt like, well, that even if it was just knowing that somebody read through it and replied to it, it felt much more meaningful. Like I felt like doing this had a real purpose. It was for my benefit, and it was giving them insight into something that they may not have known that was happening. And those are the great things about that report, is you can have this encounter with someone which is completely it's not part of your ministry. You know, you're on your way, you're in line, and you encounter somebody who needs help with something, and boom, that comes out in the report, and that gives you that experience to recognize when what our vocation is. Like, our vocation isn't inside the church, it's everywhere. It's not just in the church. So I like that. I like that.
And I will say that's one of the things that I have appreciated about you guys with your class, is the amount of feedback you do give, and the real-time feedback I think is excellent. Anything, Audrey, for you that you saw that worked really well, or that you wanted to change when you became a facilitator couple?
No, basically what Dominic said about just having Joe and Ellie there gave us the perspective of of actual deacons, and they were available more than the formation team themselves, who were responsible for so many more things, to have that. And it was just nice to be in the middle of one of the academic classes or a dimensional class and turn around and see Joe and Ellie sitting back there, and just knowing that they were there was really, really nice. And then I would say that I have seen the way Dominic makes sure he gives that feedback to each and every one of those activity reports, because he felt that was something that he could have really benefited from himself when he was in formation.
Yeah. So how did you two learn, other than just observing Deacon Joe and Ellie, how did you learn what you need to do in this role? Because it has evolved. You were ordained in 2020. There are three additional facilitator couples that have come before you, 22, 24, and 26. So how did you learn what you needed to do in this role? Was it trial by fire, or did you get some mentorship from those other couples?
Yeah, it's the latter. So definitely we went to Mark and Gloria, Herman and Sue, and
Pat and Chris,
and asked them, how do you do this? What does this mean? What happens when this comes in late? Like, how do you respond to these things?
And, what challenges
and
have you faced?
They've developed some really incredible feedback loops for them that we're going to piggyback off of. So Herman's a great Excel genius. So he puts everything
in his retired HR manager. Yeah. This guy organizes everything.
So he has a very detailed tracking system that I could benefit from, and following where my guys are with regards to turning stuff in. All of that, those metrics are helpful when you sit down with someone and you go, well, I noticed this pattern here. So because when you're looking at 15 reports, you may not remember something from 3 months ago on somebody that was later, something happened. So it's helpful that way.
And Mark and Gloria shared with us how they make it a point each formation weekend to pull a specific couple aside to be able to interact with them directly instead of as a whole group. And so those types of things we want to put into play as well.
Yeah, I think that's been a nice change we've seen over the past couple of years. I think it was Deacon Herman and Sue actually started it, and Mark and Gloria have refined it. Everyone seems to refine it. Mm-hmm. It's been another
way. That's the whole thing. The entire program has been that way. It's been refined time and time again. Mm-hmm. It never stops.
No, and you and I are incessant tinkerers as well, too, as the other problem. It's like, oh, how do we make this better? You're still, Deacon Dom and Audrey, you're still pretty early in the journey with your cohort. You have gone through the application year. You've gone through the formal discernment year. And now cohort 2028, which is your cohort, has just begun their first year of aspirancy. So this is now the 5 years of formal formation. But I'd be curious to know how this new role, so you've made this switch from being formed to being formators now. So how what you've seen in the last couple of years, even through the application and process and review and the formal discernment year, how that has altered your impression, or has it, of the formation process, or given you new insights into how formation works, should work, or even maybe some new opportunities that you see that would make it better.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. It's like seeing how everything happens and recognizing that there's a lot that goes into a single Sunday. You know, the planning and the effort and the amount of preparation for something that seems that it could be ad hoc, but it isn't. I think part of it is the struggle that I have, I think, is just getting myself out of the formation mode and into the mentor role, and not making any bad habits as to, like, just remembering what my place is there and not jumping into the conversation when
that's,
it's not
I necessary. Can imagine that's tempting, right?
Sure.
Great conversation going on in a St. Leo's class, and you're like, ooh, let me make this be quiet.
No.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and then you guys, I think the wisdom in choosing people who are newly ordained, there is a benefit there because the program's similar enough to what we did that it's not completely foreign. And I don't go, well, that doesn't make any sense, because I think the mistake could be we could make this more efficient. Well, that's not the goal, and that's not true. It is the way it is for specific reasons. So there is beauty in that, that, you know, I'm not so far from it that I can't recognize what's happening and why.
Audrey, thoughts?
Yeah, when we were in formation, I just remember moments when you would tell us, trust the process. And, you know, we learned that the call of a deacon is from the community. It is not just a personal call, but a community is calling forth these men that they believe may be deacons. And so in the formation process, I remember feeling like I have to trust that this process is being guided by the Holy Spirit. And now that I'm on the other side of it, and I'm actually part of the process, and I can see that our formation process is, and our team are guided. We are allowing ourselves to be guided by the Holy Spirit through the whole process, and you can see the results of that in the quality of the men that are going through the process. And I feel like we've talked about, you know, quantity versus quality, and having a program that has so many men in formation at the same time could be viewed as just trying to get the numbers up. But when I see, what I've seen is the exact opposite. When you have a program that's being led and guided by the Holy Spirit, the fact that there are so many men in it tells me that the Holy Spirit is moving in the Diocese of Orlando. And you can see that.
The beauty of younger couples, younger men who are, you know, have young children, they're a great example of the misconception with the diaconate that, oh, I'll wait. I think that the misconception, I'll wait until I have nothing else to do. And no, that's not how this vocation is supposed to work. And it's no discredit to anyone that has done that. But the beauty of being in your family and in your life and in your career and in the diaconate is much more impactful, because I think you've said this to me, you know, if you don't encounter people, then you're not really living your vocation. So if I'm retired and at home all day and not doing anything, I may not have as much contact with people in the workplace or people in everyday life that I would, and be able to exemplify what it is that the call really means.
So every 2 years, as we just tipped off a few minutes ago, we need to identify a new facilitator couple for the next cohort. 2030 is coming up. Oy. What would
it's like at the post office. It never ends.
Yeah, it never ends.
No, it doesn't.
So what would you two say from your experience are the most important characteristics for a facilitator couple to have that will help them perform this very, very important role effectively?
You want to take that first?
She goes, I got nothing.
No. I go back to the foundation of our relationship. We work with each other in all we do. So there's a constant feedback loop between us. And if she'll see something I don't, and I'll see something she doesn't, and collectively we may see something that would have been completely missed by either one of us. So there's that. I think the strong relationship is, for me, the most critical part. If she wasn't 100% in on it, then I wouldn't be here. And that's true not just with mentor couples, but in anything, especially as an ordained deacon. So I think just having that strong relationship, I feel like Audrey has the ability to walk with the wives and help them understand what it is that, you know, because she didn't change. She's just Audrey, and I'm just Dominic. And the ordination didn't make her someone that you can't still sit down next to at church and have a conversation with. She still does the, you know, she's still the same person, and I'm still the same person. We have a, you know, we have a vocation call, but that doesn't change who we are. And I love the fact that our congregation doesn't view her any differently than they did before ordination or during formation or prior to formation. She's the same exact person that she was then, and, you know, minus some additional beauty.
Okay. Oh, good answer.
Boy, he treaded that line carefully, didn't he?
Came out quick,
I think
though.
That's really important what you just said, and I want to make sure they heard it clear, because the foundation is you as a couple.
Absolutely.
Makes the formation couple.
Absolutely.
The mentors. Right.
Right. Absolutely.
Because there's just too many guys that come in thinking it's a guy thing, and the wives will say it out loud. It's his vocation. No, it's our vocation.
We never considered her not being there at a weekend, and not because it was convenient. We had two teenagers that were very difficult to work with, and it would have been convenient for her to stay home and me to go to class, but it would have been completely, it just wouldn't have been beneficial, because everything that I gained in that weekend, she gained, and she gained things in a perspective that I didn't, so we could feed that into each other and kind of come out even better.
So we use the term mentor a lot of times through this conversation, and really you've become a model of the sacrament of matrimony as well as vocation to the diaconate.
That's all on her. She's the one that makes that happen.
Good answer.
Yeah.
It's true. He's full of them.
Yeah. He's full of something. Yeah, I saw it coming. So, Deacon Joe, you've helped direct the evolution, obviously, of the diaconate formation program, really, for more than a decade now at this point, because I know they pulled you in soon after your own ordination. Any comments you'd like to make in summary about the facilitator couple role that hasn't been mentioned? I love the comments, by the way, that you two have made. I think they're right on on point. But even, you know, things where you see it now, where you might see it going, or any additional thoughts you want to add to this?
Well, there is a good news that it's not done being evolved. Because as we've taken the feedback from each group, and I know sometimes they don't feel like we hear them, but we hear them loud and clear. So some of the formative aspects of it is the mentor couple or the facilitator couple is going to become more engaged with the dimensional portions. There's going to be a need to understand that process more intimately from start to finish, because the men and the women that are coming into formation, they're normal people. And we want them to see that normalness of who they are authentically, created by God, and not rush them to being deacons. Okay, you're a deacon, you should know about that. No, it doesn't work that way. It's an evolution. And so we're finding new ways to allow the women to have the freedom to speak their minds, so that they don't have to feel like they're pressured to say, well, I've got to be careful what I said. I'm just going to be a good wife, sit in the corner here, because he needs to learn this stuff. And that's not the reality. And so the women have a unique perspective that needs to have the freedom to express themselves. So those are some of the things that are going to be integrated into, probably you're going to be the first group that a lot of these things are going to be integrated into. And it's going to be beautiful to be able to separate the men and the women to process some of the exercises that we torment them with so that they can speak their own minds instead of worrying about what the other one's going to say. So this has been a beautiful evolution to watch, create, and to say that I planned it.
Better to be lucky than good, Joe.
Odd dreams. Well, sometimes it's luck. Sometimes it's you always fall been. On your face, and it's like, mm-hmm. you know, there's been a lot of beautiful sayings that, you know, when you don't succeed, that becomes the learning platform for success.
Right. Absolutely.
And so we've been allowed to, we're humble enough to be allowed to allow ourselves be there.
Yeah. And never underestimate, as you've consistently said throughout the course of this conversation, that the Holy Spirit can be there to fill in our gaps when yes. we fall. So, well, Deacon Dom and Audrey, I thank you so much for stopping by the Deacon's Den today. This has been a great conversation. Your insights have been right on point. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, y'all come back some other time as well. Come up with a topic and we'll have you back in because you are playing a vital role in the formation of not only the men but their wives on this path towards ordination. And I will also say it's great having you on the formation team. It's absolutely my pleasure to be able to work with you now for 5 more years, yay, at least. and looking forward to seeing you this coming Saturday, yes. bright and early at 7 a.m. as we start another formation weekend. No rest for the weary. But good to see you guys. Can't wait to have you,
thank you
back you. In and see you on Saturday. So what's next in the Deacon's Den? Well, we've just started a new formation year with 3 concurrent cohorts and over 40 men and their wives attending formation. We've upcoming discernment nights in 6 parishes around the diocese, which will lead us to the selection by next spring of the men who will enter their formal discernment year in fall of 2024. And that will, as I said earlier, be cohort 2030. And I pray that God allows at least one of us to be retired by then. And I pray it's me. So lots of cool topics to consider within the realm of diaconal formation. And on an upcoming show, I'd also love to host our diocesan archivist to share some of the fascinating history of our diocese, which is within one day the same age as the diaconate. That means that there are lots of great subjects to explore, not only in our diocese, not only in the diaconate, but in all things as we continue to meet to discuss topics distinctly diaconate and Catholic conversation. And when we do so, when we rejoin in the Deacon's Den once again, remember, there'll always be a corner booth reserved just for you.